SACPA question period. Does Bill 46 violate our democratic rights? Is the subject or topic. And I invite the people to come up and ask questions. Short ones, because I think there may be many. And I expect you also to answer short answers. next week we have another session. It's Coulee Thirst, Plants and Water in the Old Man River Valley. And the speaker is Matthew Letts. Moderator is James Moore. You can also hear these sessions on audio through our website, sacpa.ca. And in fact, all the previous SACPA sessions can be heard on through our website. We're going to need to use this microphone. We don't have a second microphone today, so you just have to step up to the stage and away you go. So I invite the question period to start now.
Thank you, Joe. Joe, may you live long and prosper. my question is about need. Do you have any theories as to why they're pushing so hard for this transmission line from the north to Calgary and from here down into the States?
If I understood your question, do I have any idea or any opinion? No, I have fact. It's called the CNC report of the Northwest Power Pool. And you can Google this, and you can get this report. It's a very large report. The 500 kV line and the MATL line, which is down here, you'll find them in options 5A, 5B, 7A, and 8A. That report, which two members from Alberta were part of that committee, sat in committee for about a year, maybe longer, and they issued that report, and it was published in 2006. And it has all the various options complying with what CNC stands for, California, Northwest, Canada. And it's all about getting power from Canada to California. And what many of you probably don't know is you probably did hear that the city of Calgary's lights are going to go out if that 500 kV line does not get built. What you didn't know was the city of Calgary was denied standing because they were not directly and adversely affected by that power line. So explain that conflict, because the line was bringing down 750 megawatts of power from Edmonton to Calgary, and our export capability increased, ironically, by 750 megawatts. You don't have to do a lot of math there.
Howard Forsyth, for some reason at my age, my mind wanders. I go back to 1215. In Runnymede, a little meadow outside London, when King John was summoned by the Lord's temporal and the Lord's spiritual, and they told him what they thought of how he was running roughshod over the public interest. And also, they said, "We have an army right outside. And if you don't listen to reason, you may not be king anymore, and we can't even guarantee who'll get killed when shooting starts." Do you have any kind of army? What about the press? You told us at the last sentence of your presentation that you're going to work with the voter. But do you have any armies besides that, and particularly the press?
I started off with an army of one, and I'm looking for volunteers. And all you have to do, you don't need to pick up a gun, you need to pick up a pen. And you need to pick up the phone. And your weapon is your vote. And it means everything. These politicians are afraid of votes. And they will answer to it. And that's what we need to do. We need to take charge of our democracy. And we can win.
Joe, I have a question. Could you fill us in on the small or large victory you had in the courtroom in Calgary recently?
Many of you people probably heard that the EUB voided all three hearings. One is that's unconstitutional and it's against the law. Nobody knows that. We brought that to their attention. They have no authority to void anything. Their legislative mandate is to accept, deny, and maybe possibly make changes. Who the heck can possibly apply to any commission, any tribunal, put yourself in this position? You get a building permit. The committee, the board approves it. 3 years after they approve your building permit, they call you up and say, by the way, we pulled the building permit. Nobody asked us, but we just pulled it. How could you live that way? How could you plan that way financially? Nobody noticed that the ASO and AltaLink didn't complain. That ought to tell you something about that decision. See, because they didn't pull the application. AltaLink came out right after that with a new proposal. Did anyone remember that in the newspaper? Can't do that. That's illegal under this process. How could they do that? Well, in private, they said because the need still stands. So we went in front of the judge on the 29th of October to determine whether we were going to go forward on the 14th. She behaved as if judges should behave. She asked them direct questions. She took no nonsense. She said, will you withdraw that needs application? And they said, well, we can't. And then she wagged the finger at them and she said, then this is not moot. And she draped them out. We were supposed to be in court for 1 hour. We got out of court at 3:30 in the afternoon. And to our surprise, we're not going ahead on the 14th. She issued a judgment. And to this day, the EUB is denying that there's a judgment. They're going to get their noses rubbed in it as soon as it's in writing, because we're expecting it any day. But we got a judgment that they conceded to every issue. And she's writing a judgment based on that. And what she said is, we were right. Right down the line. And we intend to hold this government and this board accountable for their actions. What they did was actually criminal. The justice minister refuses to look into it, but we're not done. We are going to move ahead, and we're going to take this as far as we can take it to hold them accountable, because if we don't do it, who will be there for you when they come and spy on you? Those same people that are still there have not been held accountable. They fired the flunkies. They fired their scapegoats. But the people who made the decision are still there. There is no honor and there is no integrity. The energy minister, Mel Knight, should step down on his own. And if he won't, he needs to be fired for that.
My name's Cheryl Bradley, and my question relates partly to the public interest and partly to the whole issue of individual interest and the definition of affected. As I understand it, the legislation that governs these boards or commissions requires that they rule in the public interest. And so I'd like your thoughts on how you determine the public interest if you shut out those that have a consider themselves to have an interest. such as environmental interests or landowner organizations, that sort of thing. And then I'd also like your view on what would be a good definition of affected. I think the courts, the Supreme Court, will hear anybody who has a legitimate interest. And I'm not sure exactly how legitimate is defined, but I'm sure it's not as narrowly defined as directly and adversely affected. And so I'd just like your views on what better definitions we can put in our legislation that would ensure both landowner rights, like directly people who have a direct economic impact are protected, but also that we have the public interest recognized.
This case law that actually creates a definition of public interest and how private versus public are weighed in the courts. The current system we have with the EUB is they do not, and I asked them the question directly, they don't adhere to the protocol of adhering to past decisions. In other words, they don't, the way they put it is, doesn't matter what past decision determinations were, we just make it up as we go. And I don't mean that facetiously, that's how it was explained. So what needs to happen is simply this. It has to be flexible. It definitely has to be flexible. It has to be logical. It should meet a public standard, and public standards change. So that's why you need flexibility. If it's your property, then it should be absolute. You are directly affected. It's your property. Now, adversely affected can be a broad range of things, and there needs to be some sort of understanding and a lot of flexibility on adversely affected. What we actually have right now is a very, very narrow definition, and it's wrong because all of you probably didn't know it. We're actually going to pay for that transmission line, but none of you were allowed to have standing. And I'm saying that if you as a ratepayer, your rates are going to go up to pay for it, then you should have a right. If you have some information you want to bring or an objection you want to bring, then you have an interest. And that's why I made a proposal, like you have directly and adversely affected, but it should be directly and or adversely affected, not both, one or the other or both, and if you have a substantial interest. And from that point, now you have to have what's really called the public debate on how that is weighed. And the public needs input in this. We want to be efficient. You know, what they're saying is we don't want people just wasting our time. And what I'm saying is it's the people that matter. That's where they're going wrong. It is about the people first, industry second. We are not slaves to the industry. We want good, viable industry to serve us, not us serving them. And we got to get away from that debate. So there needs to be a lot of flexibility, but one of the problems is we've lost that flexibility. What I think needs to happen is there needs to be oversight of these committees. These committees, the board of the EUB, have been set out arm's length from the government where they are a private corporation created by legislation, and the MLAs have absolutely, they would tell you, we can't have anything to do with that. That's wrong. The MLAs are our direct elected officials. Maybe we need to put a committee of MLAs who are directly responsible to oversee the EUB for when they get out of line. To represent, what we're missing is a representative of the public in this process. And our MLAs are not doing that. And actually, they're being prevented from doing that. That's got to change. We need objectivity there to sort of monitor these government-created corporations to make sure they are doing what they're supposed to do. Because right now, what we have is created as a board that is not created for your interest. Take a look at it right on the website. Those boards are not created for you. They are created to do one thing, to extract the resources in a orderly fashion. Orderly. what does that mean? You know, well, orderly for who? And that's where we've kind of really lost the sense there. And we have a chance with Bill 46. If we're going to recreate this, let's do it then. And let's do it right. That's why we say pull the bill. Actually make a mandate with a commission and say, your job is to protect the public and protect the public's rights. And then orderly development comes after the public interest is served first and foremost.
I'm Beth Mendel-Atherstone. Thank you very much, Joe Englund. You've done a lot of work that would be beyond the scope of the most of the rest of us here in this room to be able to ferret out all this information. And I think this is a great service to all Albertans, so I thank you for that. I've heard your presentation about 2 weeks ago, and I thank you for adding on to this presentation what we can do, because there's the hope. What concerns me is the Orwellian approach by the current government to our language. And we have to look at the Alberta advantage. Is it really the Alberta disadvantage for most of us? We look at legislation, which is there presumably for us, legislation to take the legislation away from the rule of law, making us... allowing us not to have input into this particular bill. So my concern is that we're getting further and further away from democracy, as I think many of you know. On Saturday, Jack Layton will be here in this very room at noon speaking about the greater difference between the rich and the poor. And really what you're talking about is how this difference comes about, how the middle class becomes poorer and poorer with our utility rates rising. So I'm just wondering, how do you see Alberta as a model, a provincial model in Canada, of corporate takeover of Canada one province at a time?
I was an executive with the largest corporation in the world at one time, AT&T. When I sat in on a corporate boardroom, I'll never forget, I don't know if you remember the whole corporate downsizing of the late 80s, early 90s. I remember sitting in the boardroom and them saying, we're not going to fire anyone. We're not going to let anyone go. There will be no layoffs. We're going to walk them to the door and we're going to celebrate them as distinguished alumni. And I looked around the room and I was thinking, am I the only one that sees all the BS being poured out of here? What is going on here? I have very, very strong opinions of corporations, and it's a very complex subject. So I'm not going to get into it here, but there is definitely, we have a problem in our economic system. We have a free market system. We call it a free market system. But we don't have very many free markets anymore. Nobody's waking up to that. Our system of free market was designed primarily to distribute wealth. That's what it was designed for. And if you look at communism, you look at socialism, that's the ideology behind every system. Is the idea is to get wealth out there. Whether you agree with the system or not, that's the philosophy. Our free market system has turned into wealth accumulation. And those accumulating it are large corporations. And they're abusive. And they're controlling our politicians. They're controlling our resources. And they're getting fewer and fewer and larger. And that is really what's creating our major economic problem, even in this province. We are a wealthy province. But take a look at our homelessness. Take a look at the poverty level rising in the wealthiest province in Alberta. I mean, in Canada. I mean, it shouldn't be happening. So the question then becomes, why is it happening? And there's a lot of interesting subjects about petrol politics and how that affects it. But the whole idea of corporations and how, you know, the antitrust laws. Has anyone heard that word lately? It's not being used anymore. We used to, when corporations went and tried to purchase other corporations, there used to be alarm bells that went up. It's like, what's this going to do to competition? I trade oil and gas. I have for years now. And I just chuckle every time I see it on the news. The, you know, the demand for oil is going up. And I just can't, I can't listen to that on the news. I know the market too well. Oil hasn't been free since Rockefeller took it over. Way back when. I mean, it's just, there's been no free market there. And yet we speak of it as if there's a free market. When's the last time you went to one gas station and all the gas stations in the area all raised the prices or lowered the prices in unison? And I, when I say unison, I'm talking like 5-minute increments. This is insane. We've gotten used to it. And our children don't even know the difference. They have no idea what a free market should look like. So there's some huge, huge economic issues that are much broader in scope that people need to be talking about and need to be asking, how do we want our economic system to look like? Because what we have, particularly in Alberta, is we take out the resources and we sell them internationally. That's what it is. Unfortunately, we the people, and some of the, you know, the wages and stuff like that are good, but fewer and fewer people are benefiting from that, but all the profits leaving the province. I'll throw out one little tidbit. You know all about that royalty review that went on. I threw this out last night because this is a reality. The Norwegian state-owned oil company, and I forget the name, but they have bought into our own oil sands. They will be extracting bitumen and, you know, product from our oil sands for their company. They will conceivably pay more into their heritage fund than they will pay into our heritage fund. And you think about that.
Thank you, Joe. Bill Mayberry. I was wondering, I've heard the word land appropriation municipally happen as development occurs in cities and so on. Would you explain what that is, if there is such a thing? And secondly, the Security and Prosperity Partnership might suggest that the decisions of any government, whether it's Bill 46 or anything else, is out of their hands.
Issues of the WTO, the SPP, NAFTA, is very much about Imperial Oil lawyers dealing with Exxon lawyers across border, Shell lawyers dealing with Shell lawyers across the border. And I am absolutely opposed to probably every one of those type of trade agreements, because they were not done for the benefit of the people. They were done for the benefit of a few large corporations who are rigging a system. And there's a lot of evidence to support that claim. There was a second part to your question there.
Land appropriation.
The first case of that I know of happened in Connecticut, I think about 3, maybe 4 years ago, where the municipality actually took someone's property for another private developer. And both sides of the political spectrum were up in arms. But yet, neither side has done anything, which really bothered me. Here in Alberta, we are right on the cusp of doing the exact same thing. We have the Mattel line, which is strictly a very privately owned line that's coming from Lethbridge going down to Great Falls. And their idea is that they're just going to take the right away for their own project. And I say that's a fundamental flaw in our economic system when we allow one company to take somebody else's property for their own benefit. And this idea, well, we'll compensate you for it, it's insulting. It's like, it's not your right to compensate me for anything I don't want to participate in. I'm not in that. Like, where I'm at, many people own the cow-calf operations are quite large. A lot of assets there. These people are land rich, money poor. But who has the right to come and just say, I'm going to take your land? Three people that are involved in our group, four, are going to lose their homes. They're actually going to lose their home. They're being told, you got to move. so we can put this line through. And the reality is it's not for AltaLink, by the way. It's for EPCOR and TransAlta, who's got expanded coal generation plants, and they got no market to sell that electricity in. And by the way, Calgary doesn't need it. Calgary will handle their own needs as they grow, and they have the methods are all there. But the only market available for this excess power, and by the way, Alberta is going to be extremely wealthy in electricity, is the United States. So very few companies are going to benefit. By the way, I don't know if anyone knows it. AltaLink doesn't pay any taxes. Did anyone know that? None. They are a limited partnership. You have to look at the structure. It's all flow through, and that money's all leaving this country. Most people don't realize that.
So my name is Mark Sandilands, and I was very pleased to hear your comments about corporations and their influence on our governing structures right now. In that context, I'd like to invite people to come out to hear Jack Layton tomorrow at noon in the Scarlet Room right next door. It's a setup very similar to SACPA. That's not tomorrow. That's Saturday at noon. Everybody is welcome to attend. My question, I've heard some talk about these transmission lines as an alternative being underground transmission. I'm wondering if you've studied that at all and you have any comments on that.
Well, it actually goes beyond just putting them underground. The whole technology has changed considerably. Even in the initial document, they said high-voltage DC lines cost half as much as the high-voltage AC lines. So why are they proposing to put in AC lines? DC lines only use two phases versus the three phases of AC line. The 500 kV AC lines have 200 times the EMF that doubles the rate of leukemia in children. DC lines don't have that. So when I asked AltaLink how many children were going to be living along the line, they said, we don't know. And the issue then comes is, what type of grid do we want? I will tell you this. Our grid needs upgrading, but do we need more power lines? So people don't. It's hard for people to wrap their heads around that. We may not actually need more power lines, but we need to upgrade our grid. Do we want a grid that runs north-south or east-west? Should we have one rolling peak hour in Canada, or should we have five? How do we want to manage our own energy system? And what we're doing with our grid is, it appears, for the benefit of very few corporations, we're looking to sell all the power to the states. Meanwhile, are we doing ourselves any justice or any good with this idea of how do we handle this for our own public interest? And let me just say one thing about corporations, because I did say this in testimony at the last hearing. Because AltaLink and one of the other companies, I think EPCOR, went up and they spoke to the public interest. And I went up after them. I said, you have no authority and no right to speak to the public interest. You are a corporation. If you fail to advance the value of your corporate stockholder stock, you can be held accountable and can be sued. In other words, a corporation has one mandate and one mandate only: to enhance the value of the stockholders' wealth. Everything else is subservient. With that in mind, you have no business as a corporation speaking to the public interest. That's biased, and it conflicts with your objective. And there's some great books out on this subject dealing with the morality of corporations. Now, there's a difference between the morality of the corporation and the morality of the people that run corporations. There are very good people that run corporations, some of the nicest people in the world. But the fact is, the corporate structure itself, any corporation will fire a CEO just as fast as it will fire the janitor, if it means a dollar. That's how heartless corporations can be. They has no compassion. How do they call it? It's psychopathic. And it is. It's a structure that is created artificially. You can't touch it and you can't see it. And people can be victimized by it. There's a benefit for corporations, but we've let it get out of control. And we've created monsters that are controlling our political system.
This would be the last question, I think.
My name is Walter Mitzen. I'm asking the question, who has enough influence on this government to have had convinced the government to even give this bill a first reading? It is so unfair, so dictatorial, it appears to be to me. I can't imagine the government entertaining the bill at all. So who is strong enough to influence this government to do this? If you have an answer, I don't. What?
I can honestly say that probably the government lawyers at the legislature had very little to do other than to put a couple of commas and periods onto this bill. Most of this bill, and I do know this, came from a man by the name of Kellen Flukiger. Some of you may know that name. He ran our Department of Energy for a long period of time, electricity. He was the chairman, CEO of the California ISO when Enron took advantage of California. And they were laughing at his organization as being dysfunctional. So he is the main draftee of this bill. And why he ever got hired to run our system up here, I only have a theory. And that theory is a company called TransAlta was found guilty of manipulating the prices in California back in the year 2000. A guy by the name of Kellen Flukiger knew it and knew all the ins and outs of it. And he just ended up coming up to Alberta away from the FERC. See, because TransAlta was found guilty down there, but they were not convicted. They did not prosecute them because they said they made less than $10,000 doing it. Think about that one. A billion-dollar company, if I'm running a program, I make less than $10,000, I'll probably get fired. Except their annual report, they show quarterly profits for that period of time at 90%, 180%, 100% for a utility. I can watch the profits. You follow the money and you follow the problem, or you find the problem. And for that, it appears that TransAlta had their fingers all over this bill. Why? Because they stand to benefit more than anybody. The theory behind the power line where we're at is the 500 kV line was approved in the back office of Ralph Klein's legislative office with a guy by the name of Smith, who happened to be one of the CEOs of SNC-Lavalin. SNC-Lavalin did the need study to prove we needed this line. See, because AltaLink was purchased for 30% more than it was worth. You can look it right up on the internet on the annual reports. Just look at the asset value. With all the lawyers and accountants, who would buy an asset for 30% more unless they were promised a line to sweeten the deal? So SNC-Lavalin did the needs research to prove that we needed this line. You, the public, are going to pay for it. AltaLink will own it, but SNC-Lavalin owns AltaLink. And when it was brought forward in 2004 that the public should not pay for this line because public's not supposed to subsidize export, somebody by the name of Kellen Flukiger overruled that decision from the Department of Energy. His wife happens to be the executive vice president for AltaLink. And then Ralph Klein leads office and he goes to work for who else? AltaLink's lawyers. And nobody sees a conflict here. I'm sorry. There's nothing around this project that has a decent smell to it. It just can't pass the smell test.
Thank you very much to the audience for participating today. And thank you very much, Joe, for enlightening us on the subject.